Right, this is Pure Decking, show number 534 for Thursday, August the 31st, 1897. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and I've kind of hit that point where it's probably time to rip my office apart and rewire it. You know, it seems to happen every 6 months to a year, depending on how much hardware you're switching out, that it's just like, wow. This has gotten really bad. It's time to pull it all out. So, anyways, tonight we have a fox.
Hello.
We'll see if Madman makes it back in later. I imagine that he is violently beating his router with a golf club. I don't know why a golf club, because he doesn't play golf, but, you know.
He's violently beating something. Either way, we probably don't want him on the air while doing it.
Well, you know, just you know, singing the prayers of Microsoft, you know, the three-finger salute. What was the old song? F-disk format reinstall, doo-dah, doo-dah. Mm-hmm. Although, truth be told, we probably should wipe and reinstall machines more often than we do these days.
And yeah, I remember, you know, the old 95, 98 days, you know, you go about 6-8 months a year, and say, well, time for a reformat.
Well, that was the great thing about saving everything out on, like, zip drives or burning CDs, right? You format the machine, you didn't much care. Of course, nowadays, I've got my file server, so that kind of serves the same purpose, but, you know, it's kind of a pain in the butt, and they've gotten to the point now where Windows at least remains stable for about a year or so after on an install without getting completely stupid. Mm-hmm. But, you know, now they've added all this other bullshit to it, so it's like, well, the upshot, the operating system's actually a lot better than it was. The downshot, they have hot glued so much bullshit into it. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were just talking about, you know, jumping to Windows 11. And I think Static was like, well, you know, what's your problem with going to Windows 11? I said, well, why? What can I do on Windows 11 that I can't do on Windows 10 today? I don't have an answer. Nobody's given me an answer to that.
Yeah, I haven't seen a good argument for it other than, you know, they're going to hold you hostage by stopping to release patches for 10, but...
Yeah. So, you know, it's not like the jump to 10 where it was... DirectX, what was it, 12? That was tied to 10? And you actually had games and stuff that required it.
And I'm sure they'll put something like that in for 11 here to force everybody to go to, because I know, like, the last three or four major Windows upgrades, I've, you know, dug my heels in for as long as possible. Normally I wait till, like, my work PC gets forcibly upgraded to it, and then it's like, well, I guess I should have this at home so I know where everything is, and finally cave for it.
Yeah, well, like, I've got family that's on Windows 11 machines now, and oh my god. Just terrible. And I've got a work machine that's on Windows 11. And it's just like, wow, I want to talk about convincing me not to upgrade.
Yeah, I hear there's, like, a lot of issues with their telemetry and, like, you know, forced sending of data and things like that. It's like, I don't know how they get away with doing so. There's even on, like, enterprise software licenses, because, like, they're going to get hit with, like, a HIPAA suit or...
Well, the enterprise ones are the only ones that actually respect your ability to turn the telemetry off.
Yeah.
Because by default, you know, I've got family that by default, they tried to set up their Windows 11 machine. It made them make a Microsoft account, so they did it. And even though they said no to the OneDrive stuff because they didn't want to pay for it, it, you know, it tied their machine to a free OneDrive account anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as the little 5 free gig was filled up, because we're sitting there loading the backup from his old machine into it, Yeah, as soon as the 5 free gig was full, it stopped letting us write to the fucking hard drive.
Yeah.
It's like,
you can't use your hard drive until you pay us.
Yeah.
I remember when viruses used to do that as a thing.
Yeah, it's like
you
can get fucked.
Not your actual paid for OS.
It's like you can just, you know, find you a nice little barrel cactus in a pot and have a seat. I mean, you know, you can, you know, I'm not allowed to use my own hardware unless I'm paying you a subscription. I mean,
yeah,
fuck
eat a bag
off.
Of dicks. You want people to transition to Linux? Because that's how you get people to transition to Linux.
Well, unfortunately, that's what I would think that as well. But I think the more reality is that's how you get people to transition to iPads and Chromebooks.
Mm.
Now, Chromebook, you could argue, counts as Linux. I guess the iPad is descended from a BSD distro. But, I mean, I know several people who just don't have a computer at home. You know, they've got their work machine, sure, but that's the only laptop they've got. They use their phone and a tablet and then play games on a console.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't have a regular computer anymore. And, you know, if you're not... if you're not me, I can see doing that. But yeah. I can't do that.
No, I mean, like, I don't have TV. I stream all my shit on my computer upstairs,
yeah.
or my computer down in the living room. There's no way I wouldn't have it, but I mean, my workstation downstairs, yeah, that's running on Ubuntu right now, and I've heard people talking about, like, Manjaro and some of the other, like, distros that are more Windows-flavored,
mm-hmm.
I guess, so, like, an easier transition for most folks, but I think with all this overreach, they're going to be pushing people away pretty quick.
I would have thought that with a lot of the stuff when they first did it with Windows 10.
Yeah, it's true.
So part of the problem, I think, is that Microsoft just has such a death grip on the enterprise market that,
yeah.
You know, you'll have a lot of people say, well, they want to use the same thing they use at work and at home. That way they know what they're doing. You know, and I've played with Macs. I have a Mac Mini. That's what I use to run the recording, the broadcast, and the sound clips off of the Mac Mini.
Well, yeah, I mean, I remember back in the day when Apple had their head out of their ass and, like, they gave free Apple computers to all the schools.
Sure.
I remember it's like, yeah, you know, that's what you're going to have, which I'm going to want to get at home because that's what they have at school. So if I'm going to write in... you know what the hell they called their office suite, like Corel or something like
mm-hmm.
that. So if I'm going to write, you know, my homework out in
WordStar,
yeah, it's got to be compatible when I take it into school. And then, yeah, they just kind of dropped the ball on that, like, mid-90s, and IBM came in and just took over. And, yeah, so that's how they cornered the workplace market.
Apple had the same problem a lot of companies have where they start to get big. They start to get corporate, and 9 times out of 10, they kick out the people with the vision.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they fired Jobs, and suddenly their company had no direction anymore. So,
yeah.
You know, like Jobs or not, he at least gave the company direction. So,
yeah.
But, like, from what I understand, he was a fairly terrible human being as a person, but, you know.
Oh, yeah, apparently he was a total douchebag. But...
Yeah. So... But he pushed his company to do stuff, so...
Mm-hmm.
I like to think they based Cave Johnson in the Portal games off Steve Jobs.
I think there was a little bit of an influence there.
Yeah. But, yeah, man, I mean, it's like... I don't know, I don't get it. Because, like, the Mac OS, it's like, thanks, I hate it. I mean...
mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not terrible, it's not bad...
Big
I just
shiny button.
I just don't like it. It's
yeah.
It's frustrating to work with because it's like you either do it Apple's way or you just don't do it,
mm-hmm.
or you pull up a terminal and start sideloading a bunch of shit. But you know, we had a power flicker earlier today, so I had to restart a bunch of stuff when I brought this Mac Mini back up. I'll log into it, and then I turn around and look, and it says, we scheduled an update for tonight, and I'm like, no, you fucking didn't, because I'm going to be using it right then. It's like Windows at least asks, you know, before it installs sometimes. Windows 11, but that's only because they got so burned on Windows 10 installing itself like during tournaments and shit.
Yeah.
That's the funniest shit ever, is the people in the fucking Counter-Strike tournament, and the machine stops and starts installing Windows 10 in the middle of a fucking tournament.
Yeah. It's almost as good as it BSODing on Bill Gates when he was making the presentation for 98.
Yeah.
It just works, crash.
About that. Eh, well, maybe there's an alternate dimension out there where they're all modern PCs descended from the Amiga. I don't know that it's any better, but it'd be something different, though. Or maybe the Atari machine? What was that one? I forget what the Atari 8-bit, or the 16-bit Ataris were. Anyways, doesn't matter. All right, well, I've stalled long enough that I don't think Mad Bad's coming. So, I guess we'll get into it here. First article I have is from Torrent Freak, and this one is, wow. So, for many people, Google is the go-to starting point when they need to find something on the web. Just a few keystrokes and the search engine can find virtually anything. The company has also many other tools to browse and organize the web, including the Chrome browser and YouTube. All these products and services fall under the umbrella of the company Alphabet. While the various departments are largely run separately, there's plenty of overlap, too. This week, we stumbled upon information suggesting that DMCA notices received for the search engine directly impact people's privately saved links. As reported earlier this month, Google's search index is a prime target for copyright holders. Over the past several years, more than 7 billion infringing URLs have been flagged with the majority removed. This makes sense as Google is legally required to process DMCA takedown requests. I still hold that the DMCA is one of the worst written laws ever.
Mm-hmm.
How the hell can a URL be infringing? Seriously.
Yeah. Overarching, knee-jerk reaction, pretty much write it down and makes me look good for re-election bullshit law.
But yeah, what comes as a surprise is that the search takedown requests also impact other Google services. A few hours ago, Eddie Rusinmalen shared an email from Google notifying him that a link had been removed from his Google Saved collection because it violates Google's policy. The reason cited for the removal is the downstream impact as the URL in question is blocked by Google search. Now, he's got a screenshot here. The URL was a kick-ass torrents link. Quote, the following saved items in one of your collections was determined to violate Google's policy. As a result, the item will be moderated, unquote, Google writes, pointing out a defunct kick-ass torrents domain is the problem. Initially, it was suggested that this removal impacted Google's synced Chrome bookmarks, but further research revealed that that's not the case. Instead, the removals apply to Google's saved feature. The service allows users to save and organize links, similar to what Pinterest does. These links are collections that can be private or shared with third parties. The initial bookmark confusion is likely caused by the fact that in Google's app, the saved icon appears by default. So when clicked, the page in question is added to a favorite pages collection, which some people see as a bookmark. So yeah, basically in their Google app, this is not necessarily in Chrome, but this is like the Android apps. Instead of having a bookmark button up at the top, like in Firefox, I've got a couple buttons at the end of the thing. One of them is a little star for bookmarking stuff. That's a bookmark in the browser. Apparently what these apps do is they do instead they do a saved link in the Google Cloud account. And now Google DMCA complaints are starting to apply to people's saved links.
Which is why you shouldn't put all your shit in the cloud, because it's on somebody else's computer and they dictate what happens to it.
That's true, but it's also bullshit that they're literally filtering out people's bookmarks.
It is, yeah.
I mean,
because it does mean that they're scanning all your bookmarks.
Yes, they are keeping a note. You know, they're going through all of your stuff and saying, "Oh, that one's infringing. That's not allowed." I mean, okay, they're not doing it on your local computers yet, but
yet.
I mean, how long before okay, even if Google doesn't want to do this, how long before some court says to Google, "Okay, well, you control Chrome. Chrome is 75% of the browser market. Yeah, you've got you're being sued. You need to block it in Chrome. All these things,
or it's like, hey, we found a disturbing image or picture or game or something like that on your Chromebook. It has been removed, and you've been reported to the authorities. Kind of shit.
Confusing terminology aside, what stands out here is that Google's search content policy also applies to saved links. As a result, URLs for which Google receives a search takedown disappear from saved collections as well. This applies to both public and private collections. You know what I do for most of the links I want to save? Either they're in a local bookmark in my web browser, Firefox, because I know it's saving it just as an HTML file on the hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
Or I copy them out and save them in a .txt file.
Yeah.
I have several, and then I've emailed .txt files to myself full of URLs and stuff like that because I don't have to worry about some tool trying to ingest them and reformat them, because I remember trying to migrate bookmarks around various applications back in the day, and bullshit. I just...
Mm-hmm.
half the time, it's not worth the trouble.
And it's safer to make a backup, export your bookmarks to either an HTML file or CSV or something like that, so you actually have the physical copy, because that way the import tool can't fuck up halfway through and lose all your shit.
Well, that's there's something to be said for keeping offline backups as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know what? If you've copied things out and saved them on a little external hard disk, unplug the hard disk and put it in your desk drawer, I guarantee an update can't come in and wipe out what's on that disk.
Yep.
Now, that said, other things can wipe out what's on that disk, and of course, the moment you plug it into a computer that's received the update, you might have problems, but offline backups are a thing. You know what? If we're talking about things like text files and bookmarks and other small things, I say let's throw some media incompatibility in there. Get on eBay, get a USB zip drive, and keep a couple of zip disks. That way, not only... because Windows sees the thing as a floppy disk, right? So mm-hmm. not only does it not show up as a regular hard disk for shit to fuck with when it's trying to run updates and searches for content, because, half the things probably don't even bother to look for a floppy disk anymore. But two, you've got some media incompatibility, whereas half the stuff out there doesn't know what the hell it even is.
Yeah, or I need to get a USB version of my zip disk reader because I don't have anything that has that kind of connection anymore from my original one.
You can get IDE to... you've got a parallel port one, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good fucking luck. No, seriously, most of the USB to parallel port adapters, they're not real parallel ports. They're emulating a serial port just enough for printers to work, and almost nothing else works through them. So, yeah, those are a little bit rough to get going again, but I guarantee you get on eBay... USB zip disk. In fact, I'm doing it now. USB zip disk.
Oh, yeah. No, I've Googled it.
iOmega Zip 100 external USB drive with a little clear case. Nifty. $27.99, $6 shipping. So, and then there's somebody selling the parallel one for $130. And then fuck off. Yeah, mm-hmm. There's tons of these things for $30, $24. Now, of course, you got to get a disk, but, again... So, yeah, $15 USB Zip 100 USB external, mostly say untested, which on eBay is code for probably doesn't work, but yeah, there's lots of them on here. So,
even if you say like an external hard drive, like there's a USB, one of those little portable case ones.
Burn CDs.
Yeah. If you still have a CD burner.
Get a USB CD burner.
Yeah, true.
I mean, seriously, there's something to be said for backing up your shit in places other than the cloud.
Yeah.
Because, like you say, it's in the cloud. Somebody else can fuck with it. And it may or may not be malicious. I mean, Google's obvious, Google's saying they're doing this because they have to comply with a DMCA takedown request. Mm-hmm. I believe them. It's still shit, but I believe them.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that they want to be assholes about it, but you know, hey.
But yet here we are.
But here we are. You know? But you know, you think they're the only ones that deal with this kind of stuff? I mean, I've got a Dropbox story later in the article too. You know, I'm sure any of these cloud services, you know, Apple, a year or so ago, was talking about scanning through all your photos on your phone looking for illegal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Torrent Freak was able to replicate the issue. Google doesn't allow us to save URLs that are removed from Google search, such as YouTube Ripper, YOUT.com, torrent site 1337x.to, or the earlier mentioned KATCR.com. These blockades apply to single URLs, not entire domains. For example, the PirateBay.org is still visible in Google searches and can be added to a collection. However, Pirate Bay links that are de-indexed can't be saved. The same applies to other sites. The old homepage of YouTube Ripper 2conf.com can't be saved since it's been removed from Google search, but the last homepage URL, 2conf.com/NESHQ, still can be. It's not clear why Google enforces the search policy for saved links or whether preventing copyright infringement is the main goal. Company didn't immediately respond to the request for comment. It's probably because the two systems are linked together on the back end and just hitting the same database. Especially since it's a URL-based thing, not a domain-based thing.
Mm-hmm.
For now, the impact is relatively limited as the save feature isn't widely used. However, if Google decides to moderate users' Chrome bookmarks or its DNS resolvers, things could get interesting. And the problem is not that Google deciding to do that. It's going to be a lawyer making them do that.
Yeah.
Because once a lawyer figures out that that's an option, you know they're going to be in court trying to get a judge to say you have to do this. I don't even think Google's the bad guy here. I think it's a fucking DMCA is the problem.
Yeah, I would say the DMCA piranhas will be all over this.
Oh, yeah. The moment they get the idea that they could go in and clear it out of everything. Because you know they'll be after Microsoft to do the same damn thing and Apple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, anybody that's got a cloud storage thing, like, oh, you're storing these things on your servers, you got to make sure that there's no...
Hey, your service has to ensure that our business remains viable.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's ultimately what it is. You're not allowed to, your service isn't allowed to invalidate our business. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, if it's a better model, it's like, no, you're not allowed to compete with our business. It's like, well, I mean, you know, in the case of actual copyright infringement, I'd say they have a point, but most of this stuff is, overreach at best in many cases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but nobody wants to go up against them and open that can of worms because they've got a lot of money and a lot of lawyers.
Well, and you know, if they are the, you mm-hmm. know, when you've got somebody who's the legitimate copyright holder, yeah, they've got rights for distribution, sure. But a lot of these companies are also panicking as they're realizing that their business model is obsolete. So mm-hmm. instead of trying to come up with new and better business models, they're trying to remain relevant through lawfare, just outlawing the competition. Because, yeah. Well, I mean, iTunes, Apple, pretty damn good example of how to do digital distribution. And you know the music mm-hmm. companies hated it because they didn't control it.
Yeah.
So they're trying to
make sure they were wringing every little penny they could out of it.
Well,
it's like all the streaming services, like when Netflix and some of those first came out, like it was a good alternative to going to the high seas to acquire TV shows and things like that. But now that everybody and their brother's trying to come out with the same thing, and it's like, oh, well, if you want to watch this show, you got to subscribe to this service. And if you want this show, you got to subscribe to that service. It's like going back to the cable packages again and driving people right back to piracy.
Well, the better thing, yeah, it would be different if instead of running Max and Paramount Plus and Prime and Hulu and Disney and I'm probably forgetting 20 others.
Mm-hmm.
If instead these guys set up back-end systems where you've got these handful of front-ends like Roku and Netflix and the console makers and Amazon, and instead all these guys worked on the back-end to where you could just, you know, subscribe to a show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because...
Yeah, but-
Like I fully admit
they might have to watch... share. They might have to share some of their pennies with somebody else.
Mm.
That they can't stand that.
And when they honestly think that there's going to be droves of people subscribing to all their services, as opposed to what most people do, which is, okay, you want to watch Star Trek, cool, you subscribe to Paramount Plus for a month, watch all the Star Trek after it's all come out, then cancel that and go subscribe to something else for a different month to catch up on the shows on that one.
Or, you know, one Don't, friend subscribes just, to Paramount, one friend subscribes to Hulu.
Yeah.
Everybody shares the account around.
And of course, there's still the classic yo-ho-ho in a bottle of rum.
Mm-hmm.
So, not to mention people's Plex servers and other various ways of populating those. Yeah, I don't know. I understand why Google's doing what they're doing. I just feel like it's a really bad law. There got to be better ways to handle this.
Most of the copyright law that's been written is very shitty. I mean, you look at half the YouTube links. Oh, this has been flagged by Universal Music Group because there might have been a 30-second clip of a song in the background. And
well, how many people have had their YouTube videos yanked and blocked because they were filming somewhere in public and something was playing in the background?
And some people that had them taken down without any recourse just because they said, oh, yeah, this contains copyrighted material, and it's literally nothing but a person talking in a quiet room. But it's like it falls to the person that's accused. Like, the burden of proof falls upon the accused instead of the accuser. And they have to fight tooth and nail to get their account unlocked and unsuspended. And during that time, the other company is collecting all the ad revenue that might have been generated off of it. Pretty much a business scam.
Well, that's the worst part about that. Oh, you're talking about the YouTube system. Yeah, that's a joke. Because now YouTube's gotten better about it because they figured out people were abusing it. But the problem I have with a lot of these is that it's usually not the studio that's doing it. It's going to be some contractor who may or may not even be a lawyer that, they when I was doing DMCA complaints for a school, I looked into a couple of them. I don't believe half of the complaints I got were from companies that actually had the right to assert that they were trying to do this on behalf of, like, Universal Studios or whatever the movie or music was. Because when you look it up, it's some little pit-angling law firm somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
I honestly wonder how many of these DMCA complaints, I mean, not even targeting people, they're just fishing for settlements.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got this, you know, it helps if they actually were sharing the file over a torrent or, you know, Frostwire back in the day or whatever the hell. But I'm wondering how many of these they didn't even have the rights to the music or film they were filing complaints for. They were just fishing for settlements.
Yeah, it's either settlements or the ad revenue for the video during the time it's down, because there was no recourse during that time of, like, oh, you have to pay this money back. They would just cast this wide net, ban a bunch of videos, collect the money, and bail.
Well, apparently there were companies, too, that would get into the YouTube copyright system, claim copyright on a bunch of stuff they didn't own, and, didn't that happen with, like, the Mass Effect games, where it was, like, some third party was threatening people to get videos pulled down, and it wasn't even the company that made Mass Effect doing it?
Vaguely rings a bell.
Yeah, I don't remember now, but, I mean, it's... Just, I don't know. We've been talking for 20 minutes about how the DMCA is bullshit. So,
in other news, water's wet and the sky is blue.
How about this one from Ars Technica? Russia is targeting Ukraine with new Android backdoors.
Thank you.
Russia's military intelligence unit has been targeting Ukrainian Android devices with infamous Chisel, the tracking name for a new malware that's designed to backdoor devices and steal critical information, Western intelligence agency said on Thursday. Okay. Infamous Chisel is a collection of components which enable persistent access across infected Android devices over the Tor network, which periodically collates and exfiltrates victim information from the compromised device. Intelligence officials wrote on the UK, US, Canada, Australian, and intelligence officials from the UK, US, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand wrote, quote, the information exfiltrated is a combination of system device information, commercial application information, and applications specific to the Ukrainian military, unquote. Ukraine Security Service first called out the malware earlier this month. Ukrainian officials said then that Ukrainian personnel had, quote, prevented Russia's intelligence services to gain access to sensitive information, including the activity of the armed forces, deployment of the defense forces and their technical provision, etc., unquote. Infamous Chisel gains persistence by replacing the legitimate system component known as NetD with a malicious fucking network driver with a malicious version. Besides allowing Infamous Chisel to run each time the device is restarted, the malicious NetD is also the main engine for the malware. It uses shell scripts and commands to collate and collect device information, and also searches directories for files that have a predefined set of extensions. Depending on where on the infected device a collected file is located, NetD sends it to Russian servers either immediately or once a day. When exfiltrating files of interest, Infamous Chisel uses TLS protocol and hard-coded IP and port. The use of the local IP address is likely a mechanism to relay the network traffic over a VPN or other secure channel configured to the infected device. This would allow the exfiltration traffic to blend in with expected encrypted network traffic. In the event a connection to the local IP and port fails, the malware falls back to a hard-coded domain that's resolved using a request to DNS.google. Infamous Chisel, that'd be an excuse to drop something from DNS right there, is this fucking malware. Infamous Chisel also installs a version of the DropBear SSH client that can be used to remotely access the device. The version installed has authentication mechanisms that have been modified from the original version to change the way the user logs into an SSH session. So, yeah, I mean, it's surprising nobody that during an active conflict, they're starting to target each other with cyber warfare. I hate that fucking term.
I can hear you die a little bit inside saying that word.
Cybering means two people pretending to have sex in a chat room. Usually on AOL.
At least they didn't call it a cyber sword fight.
I've seen that Japanese art. It was sent to me as a troll picture one time. You click on it not knowing what it was. You received an education. And at that point, you learn not to trust certain people online. Lemon parties have nothing to do with lemons or parties.
Politics left you bitter? Lemonparty.org.
And don't be curious about the blue waffle. Believe me, you don't want to be curious about the blue waffle.
And then, Timmy, the jar breaks.
You're a bad, bad man.
Yes, I am.
just that realization of, oh, you're a bad person.
Are we the baddies?
So, amusing that, you know, I mean, they're specifically targeting the military, and it's not surprising. I mean, I've got a meme picture that shows a dude in a suit of armor, and it's, you know, says, you know, enterprise and, you know, monitored network, full encryption, firewalls, you know, managed VPN, managed MFA, and all this stuff. And then the picture below that is an arrow sticking out of the slot in the visor, and it says, user with local admin opening an email attachment. It's just like, that's how I feel about this, because you know the military, they've got to have policies on locking down their phones, right? Mm-hmm. And yet,
they should.
Somebody is going to click on fucking TikTok or whatever and get this shit on their phone.
Yeah, looking at our past current administration and their cell phone habits, don't have good faith for the leaders of other countries either.
See, if you were really smart and you had access to the IP of a company like, say, Palm, or maybe even BlackBerry, or some other mobile operating system that was perfectly functional and worked well, but is today defunct and is not really in the consumer market space, I would get with a manufacturer and I would start making, do whatever update, you'd have to redo some updates on the operating system, obviously, but like take like that Palm OS, right? I'll pick on Palm because that's the one that comes to mind for me. Because nothing's running that anymore, right? And you would
It
make
was
your
like the old argument of like, well, Apple just doesn't get viruses. Like, no one writes any viruses for it because nobody owns one. Nobody cares. You're not going to get banking information or, any of your scripty bullshit isn't going to work when 2% of the market share has an OS that's running this.
Sure. So
So it's security through obscurity, really.
it is, but it's also like we don't sell this device outside of a contract to like, a military. And then you make as part of that contract the servers, the hardening, the documentation. Here's how to manage your keys. Here's how to rotate what's on it. Here's how to, does this mean that, a counterintelligence is never going to get their hands on that device and reverse engineer it and come up with shit? No, of course it doesn't mean that. But it means they're going to at least have to fucking work for it as opposed to buying commodity Android malware off of fucking.
And I mean, at least, if you were a dedicated military government product, you could be actively looking for, any intrusions from an outside, agency. Whereas like your commercial shit, like, oh yeah, I got traffic coming in from Europe, Russia, Asia, all over the place. Of course, like, that's expected. We can't filter that.
Well, it's
But
also an
if
easy way to segment things, that are considered classified, top secret, whatever. It's like, okay, you can't load fucking TikTok or your personal email on the device because it won't fucking run on the device. That's
No Play
that,
Store for you.
right. So, could you do that with a heavily locked down Android? Sure, you absolutely could. You could put the work in and do that. But the point of it is to have an architecture that's actually incompatible with the consumer market so that somebody can't just buy commodity malware. They actually have to do the work. Now, does that mean that China and Russia won't do the work? No, of course it means they'll do the work. But, make them do the work. Make them buy you dinner before you bend over and lift the skirt. I don't have anything else on that, do you?
No, not really. Like I said, it's security through obscurity. Not many people using it, and yeah, I would say a company that was designed specifically to run that would be much more able to monitor where the incoming packets and traffic are coming from. It's like, oh, this is.
Well, it's not, I'm not approaching it through the security through obscurity aspect of it. I'm approaching it from the reduced attack surface. You're not putting consumer shit on the phone. You're not, they're not connecting it up to, whatever the latest app to see dancing chicks is. They're not browsing the internet on it because you literally didn't put a web browser on it. You know what I mean? You didn't give the user a way to put new shit on the phone because it's not somebody's personal cell phone. It's a mission-specific device. That's be a hell of a thing, but, nobody wants to do that because it would be expensive to develop and maintain. They'd much rather buy commodity Android stuff off the consumer market and then try to layer hardening on top of it. I know Samsung has a whole thing, Knox, that they sell as saying, "Oh, this is the hardened Android." It's like, sure, you can go do the work to do it, but it's still a consumer device that somebody's going to put fucking TikTok on or
Yeah, you can have the
whatever
best, you
app.
can have the best security policy around, and when your end user picks up the flash drive they found in the parking lot and sticks it into your environment.
Yeah. Or they click on that email attachment. I can't tell you when I was running email servers how many end users would have the most amazing stuff whitelisted. Because, and I actually called one of them and asked it because it was like, I thought their account had to have been hacked. And they said, "Oh no, I do that." And I'm like, "You whitelist I mean, these whitelists are nuts. They're huge. He goes, well, anytime anything landed in my quarantine box, I would whitelist it.
Jesus Christ.
And I said, good God, why? And I said, it's got to be, if it's in that quarantine box, it's probably just junk. Why are you whitelisting it? He goes, well, it might be an offer. It might be something important as a sales guy. I want to make sure that I'm not missing anything important. I'm like, well, you know what? I can write a rule for your email account so that we don't have to have a gigabyte fucking whitelist slowing down the server for your account. I could just write a rule that the spam filter doesn't apply to your account. He goes, oh, that'd be great. I'm like, you say that. Okay. Yeah. I did it, too. I put him in the spam filter rules do not apply to him. Because, like I said, he was building this massive whitelist that was a fucking proof point box that was just killing it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And the worst part is, once the existence of that rule got out, other people called me and wanted to be put on it.
Never underestimate the power of stupid people.
We had a very high-ranked SVP call me. Said he wanted his entire team put on the no spam filtering list. And I said, are you sure? Do you really want that? He said, oh, yes. Because, you see, I find these offers all the time, and I forward it out to my team because I want them to see them. He was forwarding his fucking spam to the internal employees. Because he wanted to make sure everyone saw these offers and opportunities.
Hey, if I don't forward this to 15 of my coworkers, that Nigerian prince isn't going to send me...
Right?
Jesus Christ.
Oh, the best one. There was this website that was, it was this lead generation website, right? And they were running this thing. Oh, if you run this little utility on your desktop, we'll give you 10 free leads.
Mm-hmm.
You know what that utility did?
Scraped your shit.
It scraped the fucking gal. You want to know why our spam filters...
How do you think they're getting leads to everybody else?
You want to know why our spam filters were... crashing a fucking proof point box? It's because these assholes in sales were scraping the gal and sending it to these lead sites for 10 fucking free worthless leads trying to generate mortgages.
Salespeople.
I mean, seriously. It's like, do you not understand what you're doing? It's like, well, it's getting me free leads. It's like, you just fucked over all of your coworkers.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's just a little email. What do they care? So it's not just a little email. You're crashing the proof point box because we're blocking so much fucking spam. Yahoo blacklisted our email server because of the amount of it. Actually, I had to switch MX1 and MX2, the DNS Jeez. Entries, because they blacklisted the fucking IPs and we couldn't send email because there was so much spam flowing to our systems, they assumed they had to be compromised. It was ridiculous. I hate email.
I hate people.
I will not, if I can help it again in my life, ever be an email admin again. I mean, for a company. For G15, that's different because it's mainly just me and then you guys on occasion when you need something out of the domain. And if somebody in here misbehaves, I can actually get on TeamSpeak and tell them what I really think.
Yeah.
So.
Listen here, you dense motherfucker.
Think, Mark, think. Yes, I did just point to my head like the meme. Oh, let's do this mushroom story. It's from 404media.co. Was sent to me by Fox. A genre of AI-generated books on Amazon is scaring forgers and micro... how do you say that word? Mycologists? Cookbooks and identification guides for mushrooms aimed at beginners. Nuclear physics for dummies.
I mean, mm-hmm.
Amazon has an AI-generated book problem that's been documented by journalists for months. It's not just Amazon. They're getting into the audiobooks, too.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I sent a couple of... Audible, you can refund a book if it's, like, within so much of the purchase. Because it's like, I one point was looking for some books on some stuff, and it was metaverse related because I was trying to research some things for work, and I started listening to these things and I realized these are written by an AI, and this is not a good AI. This is like just gibberish, and I got a lot of I think I sent 3 books back within a day because it was just ridiculous. Many of these books are. Oh, go ahead.
I was saying a couple of these books that are in this article have already been taken off the Amazon site, but one of the other links, he's still got like a ton of books out there, and they're like, this guy is like his photos AI generated, his entire portfolio, all the other books he's written, it's all just AI bullshit, and it's still up.
Many of these books are obviously gibberish designed to make money, but experts say that AI-generated foraging books specifically could actually kill people if they eat the wrong mushrooms because a guidebook written by an AI prompt said it was safe. The New York Mycological Society warned on social media that the proliferation, I've been drinking, of AI-generated foraging books could mean life or death. There are hundreds of poisonous fungi in North America and several that are deadly. Sigrid Jacob, president of the New York Mycological Society, told me in an email, I assume the author, quote, "They can look similar to a popular edible species, and a poor description in a book can mislead someone to eat a poisonous mushroom." Okay. I've always been told you do not learn mushroom foraging or any foraging. You do not learn that from a book. You do not learn what plants are safe and what mushrooms are safe from a book. You find a guide, someone who knows, and someone who can show you what to look for and what not to look for. Because you will kill yourself eating the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know that a plant is safe to eat, do not eat it. And the problem is, they've got books putting out really bad information because the AI doesn't know any better. A quick scan of Amazon's mushroom and foraging books revealed a bunch of books likely written by ChatGPT, but are sold without any indication that they're AI-generated and are marked as having been written by a human when they're very likely not. Quote, Edward J. Smith, unquote, is the author listed on 2 books, The Ultimate Mushroom Books Field Guide to the Southwest and Essential Field Guide to Foraging Edible and Non-Edible Mushrooms Outdoors and Indoors. If you're finding mushrooms indoors, you might want to clean more often. And psilocybin mushroom book, field guide to identification, growing, and microdosing psilocybin mushrooms for safe use and health remedies. But doesn't have any other books or an online presence otherwise. The only Edward J. Smith the author could find was a professor emeritus of medicine at the Indiana University from a staff list that's more than a decade old. The author ran the description of these books through AI-generated text detection tool ZeroGPT, which estimates how much of a section of text might have been written by an AI text generator like ChatGPT, and most of both were more than 85% written by AI. In the sample pages available on the Amazon listing, both follow a specific format, a short piece of an anecdotal fiction about a hobbyist. The psilocybin mushroom book begins with ZeroGPT, which ZeroGPT determined is 94% AI written, quote, Stella had always been interested in... I'm not even reading this. Fuck it. I mean, no, I'm not. I'm not going to sit here and read this shit.
No.
Basically, they've got posts in here showing these books on mushrooms that are just wrong. Just flat wrong. You know, pointing out these books saying, oh, it's completely safe. And then showing, no, like 50% of the people who eat this mushroom die. And if you didn't die, you probably wish you did.
Mm-hmm.
So, seriously, this is going to be a problem. It really is, because, I mean, it's dead internet theory, right? You're going to have every fucking thing generated online by AI text, because they can just... Because people in third world countries who don't speak English no good can just punch it into the thing, have it generate blocks and blocks of text for them that mm-hmm. they can then post, they can then, you know, put into books, sell online. I mean, you know, it's not going to be too long before you start seeing, I mean, hell, we probably already are. There's probably YouTube channels out there that are just nothing but an AI-generated image talking over an AI-generated script because somebody punched in, you know, some super basic, you know, prompt and just let it go.
And like with the, like the TikTok, like voice reader thing, that like people seem to be gravitating towards that kind of robotic sounding weird voice, as well as like VTuber stuff. It's like, yeah, you can make it a completely AI generated YouTube. I mean, hell, they've already been doing it for years with guys in Japan pretending to be a lady and catfishing people until the filter fails.
Oh, sure. Well, and that's the thing, though, right? I mean, if I could set up some AI models and run them either through a cloud account for a couple of bucks a month or on my local machines, so I'm not sitting there, or ChatGPT and feed it into something else to take the output, because ChatGPT is going to generate your text, right? Mm-hmm. So if you use a couple of, you know, if you spend some time and you're willing to set up the API accounts, it's not that hard to put together a collection of online services to generate a script in ChatGPT, punch it into Stable Diffusion or Midjourney to get your pictures, punch that into I forget the name of the tool now. The command line video editor on Linux. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Handbrake?
Huh?
Handbrake?
Is it Handbrake? It could be Handbrake.
I don't do a lot of video conversion, but that's what I've heard people talking about.
No,
so.
I don't think it's Handbrake.
I mean, like, even with these books, like, further down in the article, it shows, like, the author pages, like, the pictures of the people. Mm-hmm. They are Deanne-based creations.
You look at the fingers and tell?
No, they're headshots, but they can they run it through the CEO of the AI manipulation detection tool, Reality Defender, told me that the author of the image is most likely generated by an AI, and they ran it through their software, and it gives reasons why, you know, like, oh, there's, you know, manipulation here, there's artifacting, there's a bunch of different things. So it's a Hugging Face open source AI image detector.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not surprising at all because you can just punch it in and have it fill all this crap out for you. And, I mean, if you scripted up a system that might cost you $3 to $4 in API calls to generate a 10-minute video, right, and you post it online and it generates a couple $100 in ad revenue, you're way ahead. Why mm-hmm. wouldn't you have it just running on a schedule all the time?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to get huge. It doesn't have to make thousands of dollars per post. You know, it just has to, you know, make enough that, you know, it covers the API costs and then you make a profit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why wouldn't you have stuff generated through API? And, you know, who cares if it's bullshit? Because there was a video that RU sent me years ago to pull the audio out of for one of the IHN intros, where it was some, you know, I think it was a Nigerian scammer, but somewhere in that part of the world. And, you know, the guy's voice was just destroyed. He's just going, it's only money that I want. You know, if you have money, I will do anything to take it from you. And just, you know, going on and on about that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I assume most of these are.
Oh, yeah.
So
it could be a quick cash grab. I mean, you put together a channel, get a bunch of views on it.
Or an ebook, you know, if you sell a couple hundred copies of an ebook and, you know, make a couple $100 on it and close it out, well, depending on where you are in the world, that might be a huge windfall.
Yeah, didn't we cover a story, or I saw one at least a while back where people were posting Google reviews, like, under your account, like, they would send you the item, like, randomly to your account so that you were, like, a verified purchaser.
Yeah.
And then you use that data to, like, boost their standing in Amazon.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times they would get real high reviews by sending out people like a candy bar or something, right? And you know, it's like, oh, we'll send you $10 credit if you do a good review and things like that. And then they'd switch out what the product was. I don't know why that's even allowed, but that's what they would do. So they would switch out the fucking product.
They'd get a bunch of good reviews on product A and then dump it for their cheap shit on product B. Like, oh, well, it's got a bunch of good reviews. Must be good. People would buy it. And like they would tank that account and then rinse and repeat on the next one.
Yeah, why do you think all the cheap shit on Amazon, the brand names are always look like they were made by just rolling some dice? Hell, I wouldn't be surprised if all those brand names are AI generated at this point.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, why not? It's not that hard to hook this stuff together in like a Python script, so.
Well, like the saying's always been, you know, there's a sucker born every minute.
Oh, sure. So, next article is from ZDNet. I'm not going to read the whole thing. Google did an announcement at their Google Cloud Nexus event with the Duet AI for Google Workspace. Basically, it's a real-time AI collaborator that works with users across workspace applications, including Slides, Meet, Gmail, Chat, and more. It can facilitate everyday pesky tasks, such as reading emails, creating slide decks, and being in meetings. I know people who that's their entire job, is to be in meetings, make slide decks, and generate emails. And, oh, no, this is AI assistant. It's a collaborator. No, this is companies are going to fire people and replace them with this.
I mean,
and we just did the article about, you know, them recommending that you eat poisonous mushrooms. This is going to end well. I mean, I'm waiting for the first company to go bankrupt because they replaced all of their secretaries with AIs and just, you know?
Well, they're not going to go bankrupt. The CEO is going to take a big fat bonus for saving all the money from firing all the secretaries, walk out the door, and no skin off his back. I mean, hell, I know there's people that have been automating a good chunk of their jobs with ChatGPT for years now, fairly successfully.
Well, I mean, I'd be lying if I didn't have a bunch of Python scripts that I've written to automate some things, but I had to understand it well enough to do the Python scripts. I wasn't relying on fucking ChatGPT.
It's the easy button now. I've seen people use ChatGPT instead of going to Google. They just ask ChatGPT, like, what the answer is. Like, I don't believe it because I've seen it make shit up.
Swaff did that to us when we were working on some TeepSpeak stuff. And I was trying to find an option. And he said, oh, you just go here, here, here. I'm like, Suave, that option doesn't exist in that spot. Where are you getting that? And he goes, oh, I asked ChatGPT because he was playing with it a lot at the moment. And it was like, it's like, dude, I think it's making it up. Because he goes, well, no, that's what it said. I'm like, yeah, but if you go to the documentation, which is what I was looking at the time, it has that description for a lot of other things. I think it just slotted the word you fed it into the language that is in the manual for a lot of things like that. So, yeah, no. The reliability on these AIs has tanked. They've all been poisoned at this point.
Yeah.
The real future, if you want to get in on these things, in all honesty, the real future of them is going to be running private AI models. You know, as opposed to taking a big public data set and trying to use it to do stuff, because all of them are going to be full of bullshit. And people are intentionally feeding them more bullshit. There was an article a couple of weeks ago about how the accuracy of ChatGPT went from like 70% to like 20% in the couple of months after it got popular.
Yeah, it's gotten to garbage lately from what I've seen.
So, yeah, the real model is going to be in selling these models that are limited to just, you know, what you're working on and, you know, only the data you want in there for it to work with, as opposed to these, you know, you might use these huge language sets as a base just so the thing knows English, but, you know, the actual information would be pulling from stuff you would provide. That's, yeah, I think, the future of these things. Because if you just have it pulling it off the internet, it's, you know, Well, eventually it's only going to be trained on stuff it can get through web scraping, which mostly means 4chan.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's going to become racist again.
I mean, Microsoft Tay all over again, right? But, you know, I mean, it'll be amusing, but it won't be all that useful.
Yeah.
So, anyways, I saw the clock. We're about 15 seconds from the hour here, so let's do the last story, and then I want to do the dojo real quick. So the last story, Dropbox is canceling their unlimited Dropbox plans. Yeah, up until yesterday, Dropbox offered an unlimited $24 per user per month plan for businesses called Dropbox Advance that came with as much as you need storage cap. This was intended to free business users from needing to worry about quotas. But as with unlimited cell phone data plans, the bad behavior of a small group of users is apparently ruining the unlimited Dropbox storage for everybody. The company sent a blog post yesterday that it was retiring its unlimited storage policy specifically because people were buying Dropbox Advanced accounts for purposes like crypto and Chia mining, unrelated individuals pooling storage for personal use cases, or even instances of reselling storage. I like that one. It's like we're just reselling Dropbox on the back end, and we're just, you know, this is Al's super budget Dropbox or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
These users were using thousands of times more storage than Dropbox's genuine business customers. Dropbox also said this behavior has been getting worse recently because other services have also been placing caps on storage plans. At some point within the last year, Google also removed similar, quote, as much as you need, unquote, language from its Google Workspace plans. Rather than attempting to police behavior and play whack-a-mole with people abusing the service, Dropbox has imposed a 15 terabyte cap on organizations with three or fewer users. An additional 5 terabytes per user can be added on top of that with a maximum cap of 1,000 terabytes per organization.
Yeah, so if you're an organization trying to store that much on Dropbox,
call them and cut a deal with them.
For Christ's sake, yeah. You should be able to have your own on-site service or storage solution. Hell, even if you don't have a big data center, there's other places you can rent storage from. Like, it's Dropbox. They've had so many security breaches. Why are you using it as a corporate environment?
Yeah. To help legitimate business users transition, Dropbox, and this would suck if you legitimately, like if you were like a video editing house or something and you were legitimately storing all that up in Dropbox. Dropbox says customers using less than 35 terabytes of storage per license can keep using however much they're using, plus an additional 5 terabyte for 5 years, quote, at no additional charge, unquote. Organizations using more than 35 terabytes will get the same deal for 1 year, but they'll need to deal with Dropbox directly to work out pricing. Fair ball. As a baseline, adding 1 terabyte of storage without additional users will cost either $10 a month or $96 a year. Eh. I mean, for that price, go buy a terabyte hard drive. But new customers will be affected by the policy change immediately as you're... Well, so, okay. It doesn't sound like they're being dicks about it. Like, you know, they're handling the transition for users. But
yeah, that's like cutting it off, like, download your shit now or we're going to delete it.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it's all right. I'm not too bent out of shape about that. I mean, you knew it was coming with something like storage, right? When a company offers unlimited storage, if you actually were sitting there just uploading, you know, terabytes and terabytes and terabytes of data, somebody's eventually going to call you and say, look, this is not.
It's like the all-you-can-eat buffet when you sit around there all day long. Eventually, the manager comes out and chases you away.
It's like, sir, we understand it's an all-you-can-eat buffet, but could you please eat something other than the steak and crab legs? You're going to bankrupt us.
No, fuck you.
Udaba wudu solo. Yeah, I think you do a better job of it than I do. Mainly because every time I try to do the Jabba voice, the first thing that comes to my mind is the Peter Griffin. Nipple pinchy.
Little pinchy.
All right, let's do this. Is it better or worse to play that after doing bad Jabba the Hutt impersonations? I honestly don't know. Anyways, this is kind of interesting. So I'm not going to say that this is the greatest resource out there, because there's going to be some issues that are fairly apparent with it. But this Windscribe is a VPN company. They sell a VPN service. You haven't heard any of the music? Did I not hit the button? Okay, it's going out over the air and it's getting recorded. I just didn't hit the button to blast it through TeamSpeak.
Okay.
So, here we can play something real quick just to make sure it's working for you.
And now I don't suffer because I got a bottle of 60 warm hugs from God.
That come through?
Man, 60 warm hugs from God.
Okay. Yeah, I know it was coming through because I was watching the meters on the thing, so it's okay. Just TeamSpeak that wasn't getting it. It was going out to the recording and over the air, I'm sure.
All right. Just wanted to make sure.
Anyways, so what they've done is they've built a map of all the major VPN and a few other companies, and they've mapped out what these companies own. As far as, in some cases, they've got it tied to various websites, but also who owns these VPN companies. And when you click on one of them, like I'll click on ExpressVPN here, it shows that, one, they're owned by this Cape VPNs, which is owned by Cape Technologies, right? But they've actually got, okay, data breach is 0, server seizures 1, one server in Turkey. You know, they've researched a whole bunch of news articles on these things, and they even show when Cape bought ExpressVPN and CyberGhost and private internet access and all this stuff. So they're showing the relationship between all these companies for all the different VPN providers, and they've got all their sources linked. Now, the only reason this is questionable is because the company that put it together is themselves a VPN provider. So their own data on themselves, but they list that they had a server seized in Ukraine. So it looks like a genuine attempt. But even if the people who put it together in a business, within the company, were genuinely trying to be as open and straightforward as they could be, if there was something really bad in there, their boss would be like, no, take that out. Don't put that in. So at least with as far as the recommendations about themselves, you might question it. You might question some of their stuff about their most direct competitors. But, like, okay, they've got Nord and Surfshark here, which apparently merged at some point. So let's click on Nord. What does it say about Nord? Nord, based in Lithuania, I didn't know that, was hacked in 2019. The issue persisted for a month until a third party highlighted the issue as NordVPN did not disclose the breach. No surge procedures, no complied government requests, no real-world tests. So, yeah, they've got, all these different categories of data they're pulling out from them. So, but they've got owners listed and the companies that run these things. So it's real fascinating to kind of click through and explore, cause I knew a private internet access. We talked about it back in the day that one got bought, and that sucked because that was the one I used at the time. And you can kind of look at this Cape Technologies and see, because they've even got in here, it was formerly known as CrossRider. The company built tools that facilitated the spread of adware and malware. Huh. so you can, they're focusing on VPN technology now, but you can kind of see how all this stuff is hooked together. It's kind of fascinating to explore. It's definitely worth taking your time. I just would, like I said, I would take a lot of what's on here as being perfectly complete and accurate with a grain of salt, just because the source is a competing VPN company, right?
Yeah.
So,
a little bit of conflict of interest in there, but really kind of an interesting legend to see, like, who's in bed with who. And
are you clicking around in it?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot in there.
I looked at Mobile Lad VPN a while back, but now, like, they're partnered with Firefox VPN.
Mm-hmm.
Like there are a couple out here like that stand on their own. They don't seem to have any links with them. But they're fairly new.
I think whoever put it together was trying to make an honest attempt at really mapping all this out, right? But at the same time, again, the company that put it out is a VPN company, so That alone makes all of it suspect that it's complete. And so I would not use this map to justify going with a company that put it out, Windscribe. But it's interesting to click through and explore. Like, they've got Torgard in here. And, you know, they've got who the owner is. They've got the two, you know, they've got data breaches on there. They've got audits. And they said no successful real world tests. Well, the reason I like private internet access, because they go in here, they say there were two successful real world tests where they show court cases where they were trying to get information out of private internet access. But they also note in here that both of those were before CAPE bought them. So there's no way of telling what was changed on the back end. But again, it's a fascinating map to explore. It's definitely worth the time to click through. So, yeah. Anyways, that's all I got. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it, peer decking every Thursday, except I'm probably going to be taking some weeks off several times throughout the rest of the year. I actually thought about taking September off, but I don't think I'm going to do that. But they will probably miss a couple of shows in September. And definitely, well, at least one, maybe two in September. At least one in October. And, of course, we usually end up missing some time around Christmas. So,
yeah, holidays are always kind of rough getting people together for...
Yeah. So, anyways, so pure decking every Thursday with a caveat. And the Galaxy 15 radio site, Project Enigma, when it's ready, which... Assuming things don't go particularly sideways, never mind. I'm not going to commit to getting that done anytime soon. I was thinking, well, maybe by next show I might have something up and running, but I don't want to promise that. So, because honestly, I thought I was going to get to work on it this week, and that did not. So,
yeah, don't set yourself a deadline because then it stops being fun and it becomes work.
Yeah, but then it also gets done. That's the thing.
Fair.
So, I'm not going to say a deadline on the show, but... Yeah,
we'll give you shit about it and poke you.
Yeah, there you go. Again. That'll work. All right. That's, of course, all we got. Fox, do you have any closing thoughts for us tonight?
I have nothing.
All right. I'm going to play sound effects and close us out.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
Oh, fuck.
And now I don't suffer, because I got a bottle of 60 warm hugs from God.